is the Audio Class Experience.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 28 of the Audio Class Experience. And today I wanted to talk about something that's super important to know about, especially at a personal level. And it's something that you'll probably face at some time in the future and some point in your life, and it's basically consumer credit. To make it easy to understand, we will start with a practical example of consumer credit. A consumer credit is what, for example, IKEA offers. For example, when they give you the option to finance your purchases in 3, 6, or 12 months, for which, as with all credit, they'll ask you some certain conditions. The first, for example, in IKEA's case, it'll be to be a member of the club, and second, to prove your solvency. And the third, get a credit card. And the method of use is easy. You make the purchase in the store, but in reality, who's actually financing you is the bank. Your commercial bank, the one you use. The financial institution who finance the customers, in this case of IKEA. In other words, the bank pays the purchase to the Swedish chain, and they give you a consumer credit to pay for your furniture in installments. And the same thing happens when we want to finance a television in installments, or even a sofa in a local furniture store. In most cases, there's always a third party financial institution behind it, giving consumer credit to pay for our purchases in installments. In the same way, consumer credits are also those that are requested directly from a traditional bank or an online entity to buy a car, take a trip, maybe some renovations in your kitchen, whatever it is. In my country's central bank, for example, the Bank of Spain, they understand consumer credit as a category within personal loans, which are banking products in which the client or borrower receives a certain amount of money, the capital of the loan, under the commitment to return said amount together with the corresponding interest by means of periodic payments, which are installments. And the main difference between personal loans and mortgages, beyond the interest, which is higher in personal loans, it's higher than in mortgages for in terms of interest. The difference is that their repayment is not secured by any real estate, but by the debtor's present and future assets. So if you can't pay the debt back, then those are the consequences you have to go through. And what usually happens is that most personal loans online for the purchase of goods and services, this is usually the case for consumer finance. Usually most of the personal loans are online, and therefore they're considered as consumer credit. The latter, by definition, are always linked to the purchase or contracting of a service and are signed through the businessman, business owner, entrepreneur who sells a product or offers a service. In the case of Spain's Central Bank, the definition of consumer credit uses terms similar to those of the law that regulates them, but also leaves professional needs aside and adds a financial minimum so that they can be considered as such. According to the entity, consumer credit is basically consists of contracts in which a natural or legal person in the exercise of his commercial activity, profession or trade, an entrepreneur for example, grants or undertakes to grant a consumer credit in the form of a deferred payment, loan, opening of credit, or any equivalent means of financing to meet personal needs outside his business or professional activity and whose amount is at least 200 euros. This is the case of Spain. It's probably very similar in other places in the world. Maybe in the US it's very similar, in other places in Europe it's for sure similar. There's probably not much of a difference with the legal jargon. So, and the idea is pretty much the same. I don't know what's the limits in terms of the monetary limits. Maybe it's 500 euros or dollars in other places. I don't know. It depends. And the main characteristics that consumer credit has is that, firstly, they're intended for the purchase of consumer goods and services, such as a car, television, computer, furniture. Secondly, they're not excessively large in amount as opposed to mortgages. Third, the client or borrower is responsible for them with their present and future assets. So the lending institution evaluates and studies their solvency. They could do that by looking at their credit score, for example. Through a proof of income, maybe they can also look at your income statement, your balance sheet, and all that, such as a pay slip, an inventory of assets, or a sworn statement of the individual's or consumer's assets. Fourth, they're processed more quickly than mortgage loans, but the interest that they carry is higher. In the case of Spain, for example, the interest rate for mortgages is determined by the Euribor, so it's determined by the European Central Bank, and right now it's extremely low. I think it's below 1%, maybe, could be, more or less. The consumer understood as, this is number five, is understood as the natural person acting for a purpose unrelated to his or her business profession, so it's for their own private benefit. Is especially protected by law from the behavior of the lender and the information he or she provides and how he or she provides it on the loan. The law places a special emphasis on determining concepts such as the total cost of credit and the annual percentage rate, the APR. This is very important. The annual percentage rate, according to Investopedia, is the annual rate charged for borrowing or earned through an investment. APR is expressed as a percentage that represents the actual yearly cost of funds over the term of a loan. This includes any fees or additional costs associated with the transaction, but it does not take the compounding into account, like compounding interest. By the way, there's an episode about that, so better listen to that if you haven't already. There's a mathematical formula for that, which teaches you and shows you how to calculate it and how it works and all that. But as you know, for math, it's much easier to actually visualize it. So if you listen to this podcast, not on Instagram, it's a lot more difficult for me to explain the whole formula. But just search it up and you'll see it there on Investopedia or other sources that you can find. I will take a look at that. It's very good to know about that. So yeah, I'm not going to go nuts with any math explanations. Better for you to see it. Anyways, so now that you know or have more of an idea of what consumer credit is about. Oh, and by the way, yeah, what I mentioned before about how the law protects the consumer, that's really important because usually in banking, there's a moral hazard. And what they do sometimes is that they try to, the banks try to like sort of pick the kind of customers they want. Maybe they're not financially literate or they don't have a really good financial situation. And so sometimes what bankers want to do is, sort of take advantage of maybe the lack of information or asymmetric information that the other person, the consumer, might have. And so the bank might take advantage of that. So what the law does is states clearly how much the whole credit is going to cost them, so that they know perfectly whether they can afford to ask for that credit or not. So it's really important that the law intervenes in this case, even though I consider myself liberal and the less regulation, the better and all that. But it's true that there are something called market failures, which is when businesses don't act ethically or society suffers maybe costs, third-party costs, like, for example, pollution, contamination. It's a pretty dense topic. But banking, for example, does have market failures, which is through maybe the lack of information that parties may have. So banks may take advantage of those customers who don't possess the kind of knowledge that should be required in terms of like finances and loans and all that. But anyway, so now that you know about all of this, let's take a look at what's going on in other places and how society is behaving in terms of their household debt. Household debt is made of mortgages and consumer loans, in case you didn't know. The household debt as a percentage of GDP in the euro area was 57.8%, according to Trading Economics. And if we take a look at the United States, household debt tops $14 trillion, which is a new record, according to Reuters, that American households added an extra $193 billion of debt in the fourth quarter of 2019, driven by a surge in mortgage loans, and overall debt levels rose to a new record at $14.15 trillion, as mentioned earlier. And the household debt as a percentage of GDP in the U.S. was 75.96% as of quarter two 2019. 75.96% household debt to GDP ratio. Pretty big, right? Japan, for example, has a household debt accounted for 59.3% of the country's nominal GDP in December of 2019, as compared to the 58.9% from the previous year, according to SeekData.com. In China, from the data provided, household debt made up 54.6% in the second quarter of 2019, according to Statista, I think it was. So, we can say that in these relatively capitalist, although China isn't really, is considered maybe a mix of planned and market economy, fusion of it, these countries have a pretty considerably high level of household debt, since it takes up in all these cases, all the cases mentioned previously, China, Japan, US, euro area, the household debt makes up more than half of their GDP, so everything that they can produce. And well, is household debt necessarily a bad thing? Not always. It depends on how you use debt. If it's for consumption only, then that's bad. It's really bad, because that's only going to increase your liability column. And but if you use debt for leverage, for acquiring assets that generate cash flow, then that isn't so bad, as I mentioned in a previous episode on debt. In the case of the US, though, household debt is way too high. In fact, the US reached an all-time high of 98.6% of GDP. Yeah, 98.6% of GDP, that was household debt at one point. That's insane. The United States is the world's richest country, as they move tons of money around and they invest, consume, and spend trillions of dollars worth of government spending, worth in cash. But that doesn't mean that most people in the U.S. are financially literate. There are lots of problems in the U.S. for keeping up with debt like college, mortgages, and consumption in general. People are tricked to spend all their money on things that they were led to believe were assets, but are simply liabilities that just burns all their cash and burns all their hard-earned money. Buying houses without getting any money off of it, buying fancy cars, bigger houses, iPhones, eating out, going on vacation, buying bigger TVs, it all comes down to this massive problem of household debt that people simply can't bear living paycheck to paycheck. And I'm telling you guys, it's not a good situation to carry this burden your whole life with debt. I've seen this with my own eyes, even though I don't have experience, but I've seen this. The only way to deal with this debt is to leverage it so that you can buy assets that can pay them off and help you live the life that you deserve and want to live. So, all in all, it's much better to get financially literate. And that's it for today, folks. Thanks once again for tuning in to the AutoClass Experience. Make sure you follow this podcast in case you haven't already. Share it to others. Discuss what you learned. Listen to the episodes again so that you can retain the concepts better. Make sure to follow me on Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, TikTok, to be up to date with the latest content, and I hope to have you back next time. Have a marvelous day. See you.